Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, friends and comrades. Welcome back to Amandla, your weekly news show on Africa with briefings and analysis. And we're here at CQUT every Wednesday night at 7. And don't forget to check our website, amandla.ca, for updates on what's going on and following up on some of the older programs. So tonight is a rather special night. Gwen, what have we got?
It is indeed. It's a wonderful night because we are celebrating an absolutely spectacular victory. And that is that a court in Burkina Faso has found Blaise Compaoré and others guilty in the assassination of Thomas Sankara. This is a campaign that's been going for over two decades. It was a fight against deep-seated impunity. And hey, it ended in victory, and I spent a wonderful evening last night interviewing Aziz Fall, who really was the person who started this whole campaign in Montreal so many years ago, and it grew to become an international campaign, and it was relentless, and it persevered, and as I said, ended with a very positive outcome. So we're going to take a little musical break, and then when we get back, I will introduce it in greater detail.
Yeah man, une chanson pour le capitaine Thomas Isidore Jean-Noël Sankara. Si tu vas au Congo, on te parle de Lumumba. Si tu vas en Côte d'Ivoire, de Nana Boyer. Si tu vas dans une Ghana, on te parle de Kwame Nkrumah. Pourquoi chez moi, il n'en m'efface. On ne parle pas de Sankara. Pourquoi chez moi, il n'en m'écantré. On ne parle pas de Sankara. Et pourtant, il fait partie du patrimoine de ce pays. Il fait partie des bâtisseurs de Maman Africa. Si tu vas en Éthiopie, on te parle de cela, c'est Aïcha. Si tu vas au Mali, si tu vas down in South Africa, on te parle de Biko et Mandela. Pourquoi chez moi, il n'en m'efface. On ne parle pas du capitaine. Pourquoi chez moi, il n'en m'efface. On ne parle pas de Sankara. Et pourtant, il fait partie des diffuses Maman Africa. Et pourtant, il fait partie Freedom Fighters pour la cause de Maman Africa. Maman Sankara, la patrie ou la mort, nous vaincrons. Maman Sankara, la patrie ou la mort.
Oh, my Sankara.
Gwen, let's just give a little background here. I'm sure you cover it fairly well in the interview, but just Thomas Sankara was president in Burkina Faso, I believe, from 85 to 87?
No, from 83 to 87. He was in power for 4 years.
4 years, 83 to 87.
And that's
then,
right.
And then he had established a rather exemplary state that we look to as a model of what could have been had socialism and Pan-Africanism been allowed to take off. So then the assassination and overthrow of his government occurs. And from there on, what has been happening in the international scene? I guess that's where we're at with this particular interview.
Well, the interview really focuses on that. I guess what I would like to do is just for those of our listeners who maybe are not as familiar with Thomas Sankara and his program, because we don't cover that in the interview. He was in power for an all too brief 4 years. He came to power in a coup in Burkina Faso, a tiny landlocked country in West Africa. And he was a very, very popular revolutionary leader. He stood up to international financial institutions and said, no, we will not repay what is a completely odious debt. We are a country whose wealth has been stolen under colonialism and neocolonialism. And he very much refocused on using the resources that Burkina Faso does have to educate Burkinabes, to ensure that they have health, to invest in campaigns around rescripting gender roles. The emancipation of women was very high on his list of priorities. And in those 4 short years, he had a huge impact, not only in Burkina Faso, but across Africa and around the world as a very, well, as a Pan-Africanist with incredible integrity, incredible modesty. And it tragically ended in a hail of bullets. He and 12 others were killed. It was the best kept secret in the world that the mastermind behind that was the man who went on to assume power in Burkina Faso up until 2014. That was Blaise Compaoré. Ruled with an iron fist. Many died, many dissidents died under his rule. As we cover in the interview, he went on to become nefariously involved in regional politics. Anyways, he addresses that briefly in the interview. In 2014, the youth of Burkina Faso stood up and said, enough is enough, and swept him out of power. Nobody thought that that was going to be possible because he ruled with such an iron grip. And in that action, what they also made possible was they brought down the final obstacle to having a proper trial inside Burkina Faso, something, of course, Blaise Compaoré had blocked all of those years. And it allowed the trial to go forth. It has been free and fair and deemed to be so. And it ended in the ruling that he and others indeed were responsible for the assassination of Thomas Sankara. I have to tell you, Doug, just as I say it, I get goosebumps all over.
Yeah.
It is
yeah.
A phenomenal accomplishment and a phenomenal feat. And the idea for it was born, or at least the idea, the seed germinated in Montreal. It was really originally an initiative of the Group for Research, an initiative for the Liberation of Africa, GRILA, and very much Aziz Fall, who pushed this agenda very, very hard. He had collaborators all over the world who were equally dedicated and hardworking, but he was the one who, through thick and thin, pushed this thing through. There were so many times like it looked like it was ending in defeat. It was impossible. So many obstacles thrown in the way. And he steadfastly pursued it, even when many of his closest comrades said, let it go, drop it. This is never going to happen. And, you know, his dogged determination and being able to sew together an international solidarity movement around it paid off. So I think with no further ado, we should just dive into the conversation I had yesterday evening with Aziz Fall of GRILA. Aziz Fall, welcome back to Amandla. And I do have to say that I am thrilled to be embarking on such an exciting interview with you.
Well, same here. I think we have started this campaign in Amandla, even though I think it was, I can't even recall when we started.
Yeah, well, it was about 1997, 25 years ago.
Well, yes, Amanda was still on. We were still working on that case, and I think the appeal was read on air. I think, of course.
Well, look, I want to start with the verdict, part of which reads as follows. The court declares the accused Compaoré Blaise, Diendéré Gilbert, and Kafando Tousma Hyacinthe guilty of the acts of attack on state security for which they are accused. Declares the accused Compaoré Blaise and Diendéré Gilbert guilty of the acts of complicity in murder for which they are accused. Aziz, what went through your mind? What went through your head when you heard those words?
Well, the only feeling I got was same kind of goosebumps when the apartheid fell. I felt, you know, I probably so fortunate to witness twice in my lifetime something that big, at least for us. And then I had this glimpse image where Pinochet is arrested in London. I said, hey, that's exactly what we need. We have now something kind of a grip.
Right.
It is a pity he Compaoré and Kafando didn't attend the event, but you see, they don't even have a chance now to appeal. So the other who were receiving those very heavy sentences can at least appeal. So anyway, we really salute the fighting spirit and courage of Mayam Sankara and his sons and the family, the dignity of this family, and the immense work.
That's one of my questions. I'm sure you spoke to Mariam and the kids. You have all been through a lot and some mostly very, very difficult and challenging times in getting to this wonderful victory. So what did they say when you talked to them?
Well, it's so interesting to see first the humility of that family. I mean, they had a lot of dignity. The way they actually took the decision was so humble. And, you know, for example, tomorrow we have the civil part of the trial where they have to, you know, request either money or, you know, some type of compensation. And here is Mariam asking for her wedding ring, you know, refusing money, totally refusing any form of money on this thing, asking for his guitar to be back, you know, personal stuff. And no sense of revenge at all, and just the sense of being relieved and knowing that even though these people were, you know, condemned, there's other people hiding somewhere because of their power and their might, including Blaise Compaoré. But at least now, as I said, they had this dream come true. This is the very religious person who would go and attend church every Sunday and pray, you know, for this decision. And here we are today. Mm-hmm. I guess she must be happy too.
Okay, well, I want to ask a little bit more about you and all of this, because Aziz, you've devoted 25 years of your life to the international campaign Justice for Sankara, and you are one, if not the engine that drove this campaign, and more than once you had to overcome skepticism, cynicism, criticism, division within the ranks, and so many setbacks to keep this campaign moving forward. So I'd like to know how you feel 25 years later on the heels of this victory. I mean, this has just been an absolutely integral part of your life for over two decades.
Yeah, you're right. As you recall yourself, you were part of this with many, many of our members. We actually devoted, if you recall, everything happened in once. We had the apartheid period, and then we held a shell campaign, you know, cancer. We were the Ogoni people, that was almost the same period where we were so immersed and involved in all the struggles. And truly, I haven't felt the time. And I can't believe these guys got, as you said, life sentence. We have offered 25 years and maybe it's not over yet. And but truly, it had been so exciting. It is a pity that some of our lawyers, you know, Charles Roach, Kimon Kings, Jodone Kunku, the first one who actually lodged the complaint, are not here to witness such things. We have other lawyers who have been upset with the case. It was just a nightmare, you know. these guys are not paid. They have their ego and they're just amazing people, and you need to make them work. Very difficult context. For the first 20 years, we actually fought against the state. So what we have witnessed now is a state that is kind of neutral. But on the first part, we were challenging the state. And this is, I guess, what gave a sense of frustration. But truly, I can't tell you. I the only thing that I know is when I look at my kids, they managed to survive all this ordeal. We had death threats. We had any kind of problems. So the only scale, you know, to measure the time is just, okay, my kids are big enough. So I have not dreamt, you know, these 25 years, I truly have not felt in any way. It went so fast, rocketing, you know.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Well, listen, you referred to the lawyers that came and went, the lawyers that we lost over the course of the 25 years, the lawyers who passed away in the struggle. And so could you just talk a little bit about the character of the campaign? Because it was exceptional in a lot of ways. It included so many people who've been involved from so many different walks of life, so many different parts of the world. So can you tell us a little bit about all of that, this amalgam of people and the nature of the campaign?
Yeah, as you really said, the International Campaign Justice for Sankar would not be what it was and what it is without the collective of lawyers. And we had three set of teams. And the first team was, you know, Dieudonné Kunku from Congo and France, and Maître Benoende Sankara, who became actually famous because of his involvement in the case. And then we had a second team with Jean Abesolo, Bibi Barnabé, Karim Bensina, Mei Chu, our very dear Mei, Prosper Farama, Milton James Fernandez, Kimon Kling, Maître Devosu, Ferdinand Jamin Zepa, John Philpott, William Sloan, Catherine Govrol, Nicolas Bobbio. I know most of these people by heart. Aissa Tatar-Sall.
Patricia Harewood, who I hope to be able to speak to later.
Actually, she joined the third row. That was the second team. So we had to finish that third was William Sloan, Bill Sloan, and Vincent Valaye, who was very, very, very first beginning and was finally appointed as a judge and can no longer be in a lawyer team. Then we had the third team, which started 2009, 2021, and that is where Patricia Harewood from Canada and Antigua joined, Prosper Farama, Ferdinand Jamin Zepa, Julien Lalogo, Anta Guisse, who replaced Maître Aissa Tatar from France, Ambroise Farama, and the late comers, Jean-Patrice Ouedraogo, Olivier Badolo, a Grilla member, and Maître Désiré Sebogo, who is the very, very last one in this case. So, true. Yeah, I mean, in a way, you know, without this set of people working pro bono and challenging the national, judicial system and going then to the international level, we would not be today. Most of people think that this thing is just starting in October last year. No, this thing is very, very old. And the peculiar thing, I think, is that Grilla and the Burkinabe Revolution born the same year in 1984.
And I guess it needs to be noted, too, that there was this incredible sprawling team of lawyers across, at least three continents, but then they were also carried along in large part by political activists, very committed to a Sankarist vision, very committed to, addressing this issue of impunity.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, this impunity was, in a way, something that was kind of disgusting, as many people know. Blaise Compaoré is the one who actually did the coup, managed to, you know, free Sankara from jail, and that had this kind of mix of coup d'etat, military coup and upheaval. And then they went to power together as a quartet with Jean-Baptiste Lingani and Henri Zongo, Compaoré and Sankara. Sankara being like, you know, the mousquetaire d'Artagnan. And then after, you know, nearly 4 years of amazing revolutionary achievement, one of which being, you know, being countertied the structural adjustment policy that was going on in the sub-region, they start plotting. And at the time, Blaise Compaoré was justice minister. And that very day of the coup, after having masterminded another coup that is called the 8 o'clock p.m. coup. And that was an alleged coup that Sankara was supposed to perform. And they actually came to arrest him way before it will be able to fulfill that type of strategy. So in fact, that was a big pretext, but that was the way the whole thing was sold. And the spirit of the very gloomy kind of stage in the previous days. Anyway, so from the killing itself, along with 12 other people, we stayed 9 years, during which the Compaoré regime, himself being justice minister and then head of state, gave no explanation whatsoever for the death of Sankara and his fellow comrades. And they start, you know, assassinating other leaders, including Zongo and Lingani, and then other comrades who were intimidated and many, many opponents killed. So we were commemorating each year, as you recall, each October 15, as first the revolution was exactly what we were dreaming of, like popular national development, you know, self-reliant development with the Pan-Africanist and internationalist spirit. So we were daily sharing, you know, the aftermath of this revolution, hoping that other Sankarist group will mushroom from there and starting mobilizing around the idea of Sankara. And luckily, many other people were sharing our views, and to a point that when we start coming close to the imminence of the 10 years where any legal recourse would have been extinguished, this is where we start wondering, okay, what to do? And luckily we had two Burkinabe friends in the group, Ousseini Boly and Dominique Traoré, that I would never thank enough, who alerted the group to the imminence of October 15, 1997, risk of legal recourse being extinguished. And this is how we contacted the widow, and she courageously filed a complaint against X and forgery. Already, you know, if you compare to Cabral's widow.
Explain to our listeners forgery, they're not gonna know necessarily.
So yeah, because you know, the death certificate of Thomas Sankara was written in a very strange way, that he died of natural death. You know, along with 12 other people. So it was obviously a fake. No one knows how this doctor wrote this thing, whether was he intimidated or not. Anyway, this is how the case was lodged. And Benoende Sankara and Dieudonné Soukourou were the first lawyers. And then we launched the international campaign against impunity. And we are so thankful that the appeal was endorsed by some organization. We really need to name these guys, as many other today pretend being part of this process, and they were not. You know, the Human Rights Commission, the African Human Rights Network, the Togolese League for Human Rights, one of the very, very unique African group that was institutionalized, who joined, the Inter-African Union for Human Rights in Burkina, Amnesty International Canada, the Christian Action Against Torture, CISO, the Centre d'International Solidarité Ouvrière, and then some small organization like the Organization of Pan-African Youth in Senegal, CIMAD, the FIDH, and also Survie in France, Gruppo Mission, who are like these religious folks in Italy, and then a set of, you know, people, personalities such as Jean Ziegler, Professor Issa Ndiaye, Jean-Philippe Rapp, Edgar Pisani, very known French leader, and Bouba Diop from Senegal, Alioune Tine. So we had, you know, a couple of people who actually endorsed this thing, and we were so enthusiastic. But then with the time, you know, later we had this huge campaign with this Sankara caravan starting in Mexico and crisscrossing in several countries in Europe and then in Africa, and ending in 2007 with Mayam Sankara going for the first time 20 years later in Burkina Faso. And I think the seed of revolt really were set there. I think that generation actually rediscovered this is the generation of Ballet Citoyen, you know, of Smokey, all these guys. They witnessed the phenomenon, and it was a huge crowd, you know, welcoming her, and despite of the Compaoré regime spreading in all streets. So this mobilization of the campaign has contributed, in a way, keeping alive the salt and struggles of Sankarists in Burkina Faso and in the world. So while we were doing all of this, we were in front of the Burkinabe court, we exhausted all remedies, and then, you know, as you probably remember, the state has signed the International Covenant on the Human Rights Commission. So this is, for us, was the last resort to go before the Human Rights Committee. And there,
I'd like to just maybe point out to our listeners that in this period, Blaise Compaoré is in power in Burkina Faso. So it partially explains, or probably completely explains, why the campaign kept hitting a dead end inside the country. He had complete control over the state during this whole process.
Absolutely. You know, the state is instrumentalized by the Françafrique regime, and the cornerstone of the regime is, at the time, Blaise Compaoré. He took Houphouët Boigny's place. He became so powerful because first he was wealthy. As you know, part of the plot that he was involved with Charles Taylor, you know, just ramping up the Sierra Leone and Liberia and start smuggling diamonds, and then started to, you know, become one of the key elements in the NATO policy, mainly France, in the geopolitical so-called war on terror in that sub-region, you know, using his network to allow some Tuareg force and Islamist force to settle in the neighborhood, becoming the mediator in so many crises, bribing most of the leftist group so to, you know, make sure that they would be silenced in the process. So yeah, he became quite powerful, and probably in that arrogance, he saw that he is untouchable and nothing could happen. But at the international court, they lost. And that victory in 2006 was truly a legal precedent, as it was the first time in the killing of a head of state in Africa or even in the world that something as big happened in the UN committee. So I think from there, they start taking us more seriously. This is where the death threat started and, you know, all this intimidation. And this is, I think, where Salif Diallo became so instrumental. And Salif Diallo is, you know, Eminence Grise, was really the thinker behind the scene, but he was also Blaise Compaoré alibi. He was the one who said, Blaise Compaoré said that the day of the coup, he was with Salif Diallo. During the trial, it was found that Salif Diallo actually, during the coup, went to Sankara's office, was looking fiercely in the drawer for a document. And that very Salif Diallo is the one, someone I've met in Senegal when he was a student and who became very, very important in the regime. And at one point during the France-Afrique summit in France, he was at an hotel called Hotel Bristol, where he pretended that that document was stolen by so-called French services. And that document was so important as it was so showing that himself was not involved in the coup, but other people, including Frenchmen, were involved in the coup. Later, when he was very sick and sent to France, this is where we had contact, he pretended that that document was stolen. And soon later, he was appointed as ambassador in Austria, and finally, he just betrayed Compaoré and sided with the opposition. And this is how, in fact, the Kabore regime became important. So unfortunately, Salif Diallo passed away, and he was one of the key elements, one of the key witnesses in this trial, who could not do more than the testimony with the judge. But anyway, that was the climax. And I think the resistance started when Compaoré, thinking with this big arrogance that he could go for a third round to be elected, created this huge frustration and was ousted by his population. So he seek asylum in Ivory Coast, exfiltrated by French troops, and was granted citizenry from Ivory Coast, a country that it had, in a way, helped destabilize during the years. If you remember, the Force Nouvelle were, in fact, backed by Compaoré, who actually fought for the French against Laurent Gbagbo. So it is normal then Ouattara, who is now in power, is helping in return Kafando, the main killer, and Blaise Compaoré, the assassin.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit. You did mention when he was finally ousted from power. So that was in 2014, and that was really the youth of Burkina Faso who led a massive insurrection that really incredibly did unseat Compaoré and, you know, what seemed to be his iron grip on power. So that insurrection and that victory unlocked the door for relaunching the legal process that ended in victory a couple of days ago. So I guess my question is, what do you think this victory means for those young people in Burkina Faso?
Well, probably, and this is where the thing become a little more complicated, because and it was kind of a roller coaster on the past years, as soon as the coup, is it a coup or revolution happened and he was exfiltrated, then the condition of a transition was also allowed. But that was also the same time where jihadist forces started to fiercely attack the country. So in a way, it was kind of a blackmail to let the country becoming a target along with Mali. And in the same token, allowing a democratic transition where the constitution was revamped and then the election organized so you had the transition where the judge was appointed and the judge started very courageously to address the case. So then we had the election and this coalition arrived in power and actually endorsed what the transition allowed. So on the judicial level, we had great condition, but on the ground, the youth, Ballet Citoyen, and mainly the women who actually were who spearheaded the revolution, were in a way upset as the condition of living was deteriorating because of the jihadist forces. You have 2 million people who have been displaced, like 13 schools that are closed. So, you know, so this was, I think, the very difficult climax in which the court of Ouagadougou started the case. So in a way, people were not, I would not say enthusiastic, but also fed up, as you know, the daily life demand was more important than really following the case. So the turnout in terms of gathering people coming to this banquet venue where the trial started was slowly losing momentum. So it was mainly military, the family, a very little, you know, crowd, slowly becoming just a group of people. Not to say that people were not interested, but people were busy, you know, coping with problem of daily life. So, and also witnessing this regular attack, like every week you have attacks where, you know, 30, 40 people are killed. And no one is able even to go in the countryside. So this is the climax in which the trial started. And then because of this incapacity of the state to tackle the issue, rumors of coup d'etat started. And you know, in Burkina Faso, when you have rumors of coup d'etat, this is a smoking gun, something is happening, and it did happen. Then we had the coup and another set of military came. And then we were kind of upset, okay, is this constitutional to continue this case? But we were reassured in a way by what we can call the continuity of the state. So the trial resumed in full knowledge of the fact that, you know, this is kind of not really kosher, very legal, but that's the only thing we can do. But I must say that the civil parties and the defense really, and dozens of witnesses came and did a very interesting trial. Everything was open, very transparent, to the exception that the judge refused to film and record the judicial process. Okay. And this is really a pity. But large part of the truth about the assassination of Sankara and his comrade were indeed revealed. It was like a puzzle. Many pieces started, take place, and people start realizing who was who and who did what, right, and so on, and people who are lying and, you know, negating what their involvement were. That was really clear in this trial. But
did it get much media coverage in Burkina Faso, for those who are interested? Were they
on a daily basis, you have this media coverage, people reading, even myself, we're cutting, pasting most of the media and, comparing the way things were reported. Not necessarily accurately, but, you can really see that the thing is followed on a daily basis on radio, TV, and in the newspapers. And on the web, people commenting on a daily basis. And again, I think in terms of a full investigation, if I can put it in numbers, I would say like 80% of this plot is known today.
Wow.
The hidden part being the international part. And this is where I wanted to go, is that while the judge was doing his investigation and we raised the issue of an international component, United States, Ivory Coast, France, and so on. So they asked for the document, and France itself was starting to this new foreign policy where they will distance themselves from the so-called France-Afrique. And President Macron promised that he will actually release some declassified document. And they did release three sets of boxes of documents. But when you look with scrutiny in it, you see how selective they were into giving this document, and that the key documents were never given. The third lot of document arrived way too late, and the judge had actually to stop the international, and this in French is called disjonction. It's like disconnecting the international plot from the local one. And this is what was judged on from October to March, and hoping that another judge will actually handle the heavy case of the international so-called plot.
What do you think the likelihood of that is?
Well, again, this is probably depending on the fragility or not of the state. At this stage, and we do understand that the state is very fragile. The junta, which is in power, said that they would stay in power for at least 2-3 years. To be able to, it's almost judging France, it's in a way, it's very difficult. We have many evidence showing that during the so-called cohabitation, this is where, the right and the left wing were in power. This is mainly Chirac and Mitterrand. The France-Afrique network was called on business. This is Focard and Mitterrand, the son, and Guy Pen. And we have actually established a whole web of interest, including other foreign interests into that period, to see that many, many things were not an accident, and they were actually masterminding at least the first coup, the one that was organized with Jonas Savimbi in Ivory Coast, with Charles Taylor, etc. That one is clearly an involvement where, Libya was involved. And so, yes, indeed, there is, enough material to dig into it and to try to know what really happened. But that depends on a very strong state. That depends on whether the United States will release the documents, and also if the archives from France would be released one day. So a truly full investigation means that you would have a judge in France, We already had one called Commission Rogatoire that allows the two documents, set of documents, to be allowed, but it takes a more political will. And with the recent election in France, seeing the type of leaders who are going to be elected, I'm not sure that we will have a full cooperation from the French authority.
That's clear. But do you think that there will still be an impact of this decision on politically on the international corridors of power? I mean, impunity was broken. Maybe the light was not shed on the international players the way it should have been, and perhaps someday will. But even given that, you read between the lines, it did come out in the case that there was international complicity. So do you think that this decision is going to have any kind of repercussion internationally?
As there is a huge lack in impunity cases in the whole continent, as you know, most of our leaders are martyrs who in fact have never had a single chance to be into such a judicial process. After 25 years, it's the first. I think we don't have any equivalent. So yes, I guess history will or not use this legal precedent to show that impunity should be tackled and that people should be organized. For us, the message is that this is not something that should happen anywhere else in the continent, mm-hmm. that there is no way that a government should be assaulted by other people and people killed that way. And in a way, that culture of impunity need to stop. But as you know, there is no binding covenant on impunity on the international level, and this is done on purpose, because there you could go and suit transnational corporation, you can sue the United States, etc. And this is the problem we have with the CPI at The Hague, is that yes, what type of structure we have. And not to say that we have also to cope with the fact that the international relation itself is changing. We are at the transnational level where we have no laws at all. So this impunity case today for Africa is absolutely important. I just hope that we have, break one of the many doors and that we have contributed in a way, to change the mindset on this thing, to show that other ways of doing law, other ways of understanding and fighting together in internationalist ways is possible. But we have so many cases. Who would go today for Chris Hani? Or, I just had the chance to speak with Lumbumba's sons and daughters, and there they are fighting for the repatriation of one tooth, from Belgium. And behind that, you have the evidence that it was an international plot. You have prescription today. Same for Cabral, same for Ben Barka, whose family is still fighting, and so on and so on. Same for Ken Saawiwa and the rest, who would go and find the money stolen by Abacha and so on. So this impunity culture is just everywhere, not to mention the Comprador regime, using and stealing the money everywhere.
Yes, but I think it's fair to say that you helped to hammer one nail into that coffin.
Yeah. But there are many ghosts around. We need more coffin to make sure that, and enough nails to do the work.
I want to end on a quote from Thomas Sankara, who said, "Where discouragement falls, there rises the victory of the persevering." And Aziz, you and your campaign certainly proved him very right on that. So I want to end by congratulating you.
Well, it's congratulations for all the folks in our group. As you know, many, many people have participated in this long, long struggle, and it's not over.
It's not over. So we will surely speak again. But for now, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
And you've just been listening to a conversation that I had yesterday evening with Aziz Fall of the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa here on Amandla, CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, CKUT.ca around the world.
And so who's next in this list here that you have for the tribute to Thomas Sankara?
Yes, so I just randomly came across a piece by Odelia Karoma. She is a reggae artist from Sierra Leone, and she has a beautiful piece called A Voice Note, to Thomas Sankara, and it tells so much of his story and why he was so important. And I think also, you know, as Aziz brought up in the interview, in the conversation, the ongoing impact and legacy of Thomas Sankara, this voice note to Thomas Sankara is clearly evidence of how Sankara continues to resonate with people on the continent and elsewhere. And so her voice note to him brings up so many of the issues and frustrations and challenges that Africans are facing in the in all of the blocked efforts for structural change. And that's exactly what Sankara represented, was profound structural change that is blocked at every turn, in this instance with a bullet. In so many other instances, it's undermined. So again, here is Odilia Koroma with a voice note to Thomas Sankara.
Cancel all debts and let's be free. Yeah.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're doing well where you are. It's been a long time since they killed you, but your name is still on our lips. You said, can't pay, won't pay. We say, shouldn't pay, have paid, we're done paid. This debt isn't just. It started from injustice of colonization. It continued through wars, through blood, through sweat. This debt is killing our children, breaking the back of our women. Things haven't changed much, you know. We're still here, trying to make sense of a world where some can take a walk into space while others try to find clean water just to drink. You know, they've finally done the court case about your killing. Your friend, the assassin, didn't come. Some say he's depressed. Maybe he's just sad from not being the ruler anymore. But maybe he can't sleep. Maybe you visit him in his dreams. Anyway, you're dead a long time ago, and still today we sing your name, Sankara, Sankara. And you know, we've won some battles. Yes, some debt got canceled. But we are still at war, ravaging war. Too many people like us dying at it. And there are now new players in the game. Some vulture funds, some new countries buying up our debt or lending us money that we can't pay, that is not used for our benefit. We're tired. But here we are, gathered, more and more people knowing, accepting, understanding that it's not okay to hold so many people around the world in bondage, in hostage, tied up by a debt they didn't contract by a debt that was not used for their benefit. We are here, gathered to say that it's not okay, and to see together the day when we will be independent, independent, independent from debt. How are you up there? Maybe you can see us and you can hear us. Or maybe you have scattered in the land and every atom of your body has multiplied. Maybe there are so many Sankaras in our movement.
Cancel all debts and let's be free. Yeah. Ask for much more than debt, really. We demand
ask for much more than debt relief. We demand debt justice. Oh,
il y a des hommes qui perdent la tête.
Aïe, aïe, aïe.
Pour un qui rêve de conquête. Il y en a cent qui n'ont rien dans l'assiette.
Aïe, aïe, aïe.
Quand au nord on fait la fête, au sud on meurt pour réduire la dette.
La dette ne peut pas être remboursée parce que, d'abord, si nous ne payons pas, nos bailleurs de fonds ne mourront pas. Soyons-en sûrs. Par contre, si nous payons, c'est nous qui allons mourir. Soyons-en sûrs également. 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 L'endettement, on jouait comme dans un casino. Tant qu'il gagnait, il y avait point de débat. Maintenant qu'ils ont perdu au jeu, ils nous exigent le remboursement. Et on parle de crise. Ils ont joué, ils ont perdu. C'est la règle du jeu. La vie continue.
Che spalettari la politico también, a la rien per i baretti dire nuesti sentiment, a la rien per la planeta e su danza che danzarà, perché gli sono messo un fraile a prendere tutti di pa, perché la terra è sveduno, che già mai li peccarà.
Tout seul refuse de payer la dette, je ne serai pas là à la prochaine conférence.
You've just been listening to a piece off of the album Drop the Debt. Oka put this together, Auska rather put this together, and it's actually a rap version of bringing into prominence the speech by Dhamma Sankara denouncing the debt. And Gwen, I was just thinking as well, as we visited Malawi, I saw at least three different times Sankara t-shirts being worn around. People seem to have picked up that this was a real hero that should be really much more widely acclaimed.
Oh man, and if ever there were a country on the continent that is still in the shackles of neocolonialism, it would be Malawi. So if Thomas Sankara's message were to resonate anywhere in the world, I would certainly understand why it would in a country like Malawi. We were planning on talking a little bit about our trip to Malawi, Doug, this week, but with the news around Thomas Sankara, we decided to devote the hour to that. However, next week, Doug and I will be reflecting a little bit on what we saw on the ground in Malawi, some of the people we spoke to, some of our observations. So stay tuned for that next week, and in the meantime, stay tuned for Jazz Euphorium.
Africa unite, Batsilelile. Africa unite, Batsilelile.
Suma zeleze, ah, avelele. Suma zeleze, ah, avelele.
In the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
This is Tony from Planet Giza, and you're listening to CKUT Montreal Community Radio. This is the crib right here, so shout-outs to every station on here, and shout-outs to you, the listener. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
Petty love shit, don't want that petty love shit. I want that better love shit, that grown up to the grave shit. Don't want that petty love shit, cause that ain't what we love is. Give me that better love shit, that grown up to the grave shit. I know you see me calling your phone ain't fucking dead. You just tryna piss me off while you're leaving me on red. Got me acting outside myself. Crazy, you say I should get some help. When you the one that's bringing all the stress, I'm better off all alone.